So you were president of the Junior Chamber of Commerce for 1 year?
Mm-hmm.
39, 40?
38, 39.
38, 39?
Mm-hmm.
And you were still working for
the bank?
The bank.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. By that time, I'd gone on the Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors. I was on it off and on before and after the war for 13 years. Involved with all kinds of committees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That. By 1940, we were beginning to be able to sell some of the foreclosed property that the bank had. Until then, you couldn't. All we could do was, in the Depression, when we'd take it, my job was to go out and inspect it. Lots of the houses were off the foundations, and we arranged to get them straightened up and in condition that somebody could live in them, and rented them for whatever you could get.
Mm-hmm.
By 1940, we began to be able to sell them for 10% down, 1% a month, including 6% interest. papers were full of the war in Europe. Roosevelt had given some of our old destroyers to England. The isolationists were screaming to high heaven, and some of us who believed that England was, France were fighting our war as well as our own, were also helping them. Where were they? What was I talking about? When the phone rang.
World War II.
Yeah.
I think Roosevelt,
Lindsay. Mm-hmm. I remember, yeah, I was out of the presidency of the Junior Chamber, and the Junior Chamber decided to stage a debate. For aiding, what the hell was it? It had a slogan, Save America by Aiding the Allies, or something of that kind. Another fellow and I, Joe McCoy, we took the pro side, and a lawyer who'd been a champion debater with S.C., Amos Crawford, and somebody else took the anti side, and we staged them. Part of the Junior Chamber meeting at the Pacific Coast Club. They had a packed house. A lot of businessmen came.
Mm-hmm.
I think Joe and I lost the debate. But I was so sure the United States was be involved. Couldn't help it. One way or another, I had no idea the way it would turn out with Pearl Harbor. I started out a friend who was getting in the Navy. I went to the bank and told him I would like to do that too. I said, well, we got to treat you just like you were quitting to go to work for another bank. And But after Pearl Harbor, I knew I wanted to be in uniform as I could be, and went up to Sunday after Pearl Harbor, I went up to the reserve base in Los Angeles, stood in line in the rain 3 or 4 hours to get in. Finally got that little Lieutenant J.J. who looked at the sheet I'd filled out. George, but the Navy, the only thing we could use you for is a seaman. Then I tried the Air Force. And they kept stringing me along. Finally, my good friend Reg Dupree phoned me one day and said, I know you want to get in the service, and I've just come from a place where I'm sure they're looking for guys like you. They turned me down because I'm overweight, he said. And the Navy had started a corps called Aviation Volunteer Specialists. Then take older men like me. I was 37 then. Put us in uniform as officers to take the paperwork off of their pilots.
Okay.
The pilots, philosophically or psychologically, don't like paperwork and desk work. Well, they must have taken 2,000 guys like me. At any rate, my friend Dupree went on a rigorous diet, and by the time I was being accepted, he'd lost enough weight, he was accepted. He played football at SC. Well, we were reported together to Quonset Point in 1942. For indoctrination and being turned into Navy officers. And after 2 months there, they sent me to North Island, San Diego for training in air operations. It's how to run an airfield and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I went to Sitka, Alaska for a year, and out to Latu for 6 months. Sat out on that too, and you had the chance to ask for what you would like to do when you got out of there, and I asked for Naval Air Station San Diego. And to my great amazement and pleasure, I got assigned there. The last year of the war I spent there as assistant to the executive officer and the commanding officer.
What rank did you have by then?
Well, I went in as lieutenant at my age. Oh. I was beginning to get a few gray hairs. I would have looked silly, I guess. I came out as lieutenant commander. Okay. I liked the Navy. I thought about staying in, but at my age, I didn't think I could do it. Anyway, I came back to the bank. In 1946. And by that time, the job I'd had had boiled down to just being building manager. When I asked for transfer to the real estate loan department,
mm-hmm.
and they did it. I hadn't been there, desk downstairs then, for about 3 weeks when Cliff Jamison, who was then the manager of the bank, sent for me and said, hey, uptown the real estate department wants you back and they want you up there. So it was a better job. I was moved up to head office. In the real estate department.
His office was in Los Angeles?
Sixth and Spring.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I had to commit by then. I'd been married before the war. You know, one of us wanted to move to Los Angeles. I read the red cars. I'm one of the commuters of the old red cars. Mm-hmm. At first I hated it. I hadn't been there but 3 months when and I didn't like head office. The pressures up there were pretty strong. Harry Buffum telephoned me at home and wanted me to have dinner with him and Larry Collins. Which I did later on, and they wanted me to take the job as executive of the community trust. Because before the war, along with being active in the chamber, I had become very active in the community trust, and I'd been chairman of their budget committee for, I think, 2 or 3 times. And the executive of that time was a man named Howard King, a very brilliant guy, really. But he wanted to retire. And I don't blame him. The year after the war in 1946, the community trust was able to raise just half as much money as raised the year before. And all the agencies in town were desperate.
Where was it headquartered at that time?
In the Crest Building at, is that 6th, 5th and Pine? Mm-hmm. Up on the top floor.
I only know of it out on Linden, in that modern building.
So I decided to leave the bank and do that, so I'd be back in Long Beach. But it was tough because in 1946, all the huge shipyards had closed, all those employees had gone, Douglas had cut away back.
Had the Navy shipyard closed?
No, not the Navy shipyard, but there were big, huge private shipyards that were building warships and ships during the war. They had been big contributors. I loved it. In 1947, I was on my own. And we stepped up about 20% above 1946. I was looking myself silly. And the Bixby sent for me. Mr. Wines, who was then the manager of the Joseph Bixby Company. Because of my experience with the bank, the real estate, they thought they'd like to have me. So they were just getting ready to start building the shopping center at the San Antonio Atlantic. And I said no, I was too involved in the community chest. Anyway, after 2 more sessions and a little better pay, I made the change and started for the Bixby's in January
1948. Where were you living at this time?
Well, at that time I was still married to my first wife and living at 9th and Elm. No. We had bought a home at 3309 East First, a lovely old place. I've lived so long. So much to remember.
Yeah.
But this is not Long Beach. It's me, so.
I'm interested that when, say, the Bixby Company built the Bixby Knoll Shopping Center or developed it, Did they do the entire thing? Did they build the buildings and then lease them to the stores? Or
yes,
they
yeah. They had. Well, Joe and Bixby Company had owned thousands of acres of real estate, which had shrunk and shrunk as they spent money and lost money. And
would you say he was land poor?
Oh, yes, very much so.
Uh-huh.
And, they were the farmers ended up owning the Los Cerritos, Bixby Knowles, and not much of downtown. But all of downtown was gone then that they had owned, except one building on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
At one time they had 45 warehouse buildings in Los Angeles, and all those were gone but six. They had subdivided Bixby Knowles before the war and then couldn't sell it at all. And at the end of the war, they had begun to be able to sell it again, and they decided then to hold on to the 35 acres at San Antonio and Atlantic, on the corners of Orange and San Antonio, and San Antonio and Long Beach Boulevard. Orange and Carson, and hopefully be able to build buildings on it, and that Orange and Atlantic and San Antonio build a shopping center. Well, they had the shopping center laid out, the plan for it, and the streets in when I came along, and had made one lease with Thrifty Drugstore to build the building on the corner. They had sold land to the W.D. Grant Company and the Security Bank in their first block on which they could build buildings. And they had sold the corner of 45th and Atlantic to Buffums, on which Buffums planned to build a building.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And the rest of it, we were making leases as we could find people to use property and building buildings. And when we'd get one built, we'd borrow money on it and build another one.
Mm-hmm.
And gradually build up the corners of Orange and San Antonio and service stations. And modernized the old building downtown on Broadway. That's where the tree planting program started down there. I worked on that for 2 years. And when you go to plant a tree on the sidewalk, it's not simple. You got to deal with the electrical company and the gas company and the street department and the park department, and it took 2 years.
No. I'm not familiar with the program. The tree planting program for just downtown?
Downtown. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now they're tearing them all out. But we got them started in front of that old building on Broadway, and Buffums joined with us next door.
Uh-huh.
And then Pine Avenue was completely planted with them, and Broadway. Of course, they torn them all out with this redevelopment that's going on. That was a great thing.
I get a little mixed up with the relationship between Alameda's land, Bixby land, Jotham Bixby Company, Amelia M.E. Bixby Company.
Do you want to hear that?
Yes, I'd like to.
I don't know the years, but around the Civil War, a man named Leland Bixby and his cousin Thomas Flint lived in Maine, where they and their relatives raised sheep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this was at the time of the gold rush. They decided to come out to California and see about this gold rush.
Mm-hmm.
When they got here, they went up north of San Francisco. I can't remember the place I read it. But instead of mining, they opened up some kind of a shop to deal with the miners, and they were very trustworthy, and the miners would store their gold with them and stuff like that. Well, after a year, they had accumulated some money of their own. They decided they liked California. They went back home and raised some more money. I guess they had bought some land up north of Monterey by that time, which they thought would be good for raising sheep. They went back home and came out to the end of the railroad in Illinois. And there got horses and started buying cattle to drive to California with which to start a ranch. And that's what they did. They drove those cattle from Illinois through St. Joseph, Missouri, which was the jumping off place for the West, all the way across down through Cajon Pass and up to Monterey and settled down to ranching. Then they heard about the ranches down here, Rancho Los Cerritos. The owner, who is he? He married the Spanish daughter who inherited it. And
Cota.
There had been a long drought. His cattle had all died. Llewellyn and Flint came down and bought the Rancho Los Cerritos. 27,000 acres for 75 cents an acre in gold. The old adobe out there with this Virginia Country Club was the only house. And they moved in there. Part of the old adobe is still there, but you can't see much of it. It's been added to.
Yeah.
And started raising sheep and cattle. And Llewellyn's younger brother named Jotham came out. And Flint and Llewellyn had, they owned ranches all over Central California and Orange County. Jotham took over the managing of the Rancho Los Cerritos, and they let him buy in and get half interest. I've been told that along the way, old Llewellyn, who was still a young man, met a young guy named Tom Irvine who had just kind of come out here. Went over into Orange County with him and started buying land. Then Llewellyn sold out in Orange County and came back here. And he and Jotham had a cousin named John, who I think was a school teacher in Los Angeles by that time. Apparently he was a very nice guy that everybody liked and trusted. And he would have liked to be a rancher too. By that time the Rancho Los Alamitos, which joins Alamitos Avenue is the dividing line, you know, was in trouble. They could buy that at a bargain. They didn't have any money, so they met a little guy named I.W. Hellman.
Yeah.
We did have gold. So they put together a corporation called the Alamitos Land Company. And used Hellman's Gold to buy the ranch of Los Alamitos. Jotham and Llewellyn put in land. And they took in John to be the manager of Ranch Los Alamitos. And I don't know, so for some reason they weren't making as much as Hellman wanted, and he wanted his money, and they couldn't pay him, and so they divided up everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Jotham took the land on which Lakewood is now built, and soon sold it to old Senator Montana
Clark.
Llewellyn took East Long Beach around the traffic circle in the east part of the airport. John took the land where State College and Rancho Los Alamitos Adobe are,
mm-hmm.
over in Orange County, north of 7th Street. And Hellman took the land north of Seal Beach, up to 7th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And they separated. Alameda's land kept some of the land along Ocean Boulevard. That's why it's all Alameda's Beach town site there. And it's kept the east end of Signal Hill, I think, because nobody wanted it. It was so messed up and chewed up and rough. They had some land north of Sunset Beach, Tidelands, really. Well, Llewellyn then, in 1896, formed the Bixby Land Company. The original one. Got a son and two or three daughters. And with the company, when he died, he could leave stock instead of trying to divide up land. That's where the Bixby Land Company commenced. Jotham finally in 1902 formed the Jotham Bixby Company for the same reason. He and his wife had had several children, but at the time of 1902 there were only three sons and a daughter. One of those sons, the oldest son named George H. Bixby, married a woman named Amelia.
Yes.
And apparently he was favored by Jotham because Jotham depended on him heavily, and George acquired some of the property along the way and was pretty dominant in the Jotham Bixby Company. When he died, he left everything to Amelia. And she had six children, two daughters and four sons. So she incorporated as the Amelia M.E. Bixby Company. At that time, they owned a lot of the land in Los Cerritos and where the Virginia Country Club is.
Yeah.
A lot of warehouses in Los Angeles, like Jotham did. But gradually during the years they disposed of all their real estate and ended up with big holdings of stock in the Jotham Bixby Company and the Bixby Land Company. John, I think, had one son and one daughter when he died, Fred and Susanna.